I had the thought in my mind, oh no, a mug is falling. Yeah. I should catch it. Wait, I'm too far away. Mike, do something. Less than a second. It's amazing how quickly
yeah.
the
magic.
Escort mission.
Roll for host.
Let's roll for host.
Ugh. Ooh, 16. Ooh, 15.
One.
Natural one.
That's the best, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So number one.
So
in opposite world.
Robin got. Did you want to roll, Justin?
Just do it for fun.
Just grab.
I might as well take the one. That's not upsetting anyone, right?
No, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, you're good.
Just roll.
I think we can remember.
15. Okay. Okay. Wow. I win with 16. Woohoo.
You got the 16?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, yeah. Welcome to the Ask Robin
Start hosting, host.
I am your host. I am Chaz. We are here in Mike's... this is not really a basement.
You were going to say
it
basement.
It feels like a basement.
I felt
studio.
The basement coming.
We can say studio.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're in the
there
studio.
There are instruments, microphones.
We're in the Escort studio. Mission studio.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Electronics.
Yeah. Here back again with another... delicious episode of deliciousness. Joining me
tasty
as he does all the time, Mike.
Sup.
And as they don't do all the time but have done in the past, Robin.
Hey.
And Justin.
Hey.
Both past and future guests on the podcast.
But wait, Chaz, where's Josh?
Yes, where is Josh? Not Josh.
He's in Berlin.
He's in Europe Berlin? Somewhere.
Yeah,
he's
somewhere
probably drinking and having a good time. Because every time he gets on chat, he said, I'm somewhere drinking.
Well, it's like 5 a.m. there right now, so probably not right now.
Or maybe.
Monte Carlo.
He's only got a few days left. So.
And he's with Sterling, which apparently means something.
That is
to those who know him.
A significant
with Sterling or in Sterling?
With.
He's with a person called Sterling.
Okay. Yeah.
There is a person named Sterling.
But he will be back next week, we think, if he actually makes his planes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, doesn't he have like some crazy...
He's like five planes
yeah,
in
I
a
pick
row.
Him up next Monday and he is on four different planes that day. And he's basically flying the entire day.
Right. Like he figured out the cheapest possible way
yes,
to get back.
Which
like,
means...
Which means many plane
stopping
flights.
Stopping everywhere yeah. for refueling and whatever. Okay.
Nice. Well, thank you to you who are listening. Make sure you go to our website and do all the wonderful things you can there. Like follow us and send us mail. mail@theescortmission.com. And if you're going to buy something that we talk about on the show, do it via our Amazon link, because then we get monies and we are happy. So what's been going on? What's been going on this week, Mike?
So I'm going to start off the show with if you will do me the pleasure, with a meme of the week.
Meme of the week. I'm not doing a second theme song.
Meme of the week. Bling. Okay.
That's exactly the same as
that's the mail song.
The mailbag song.
So my meme of the week, this was actually like from 2 weeks ago that I found this, but it's still worth at least mentioning. So what the kids are doing now on the YouTubes that I've noticed, you know, you may be aware of like the cinnamon challenge where people take like a whole tablespoon of cinnamon and try to swallow it and fail. Because it sounds doable, but it's not. The new one is the condom challenge. So the condom challenge, I watched a video that was linked and it was like...
Why?
Because it was there.
Because internet.
Yeah. So the condom challenge involves you taking a condom and snorting it up your nose and pulling it out of your mouth.
Ew.
And I watched a video of someone do this and that happened. And that's a thing.
This reminds me of something. Not exactly.
I'm sorry.
Asphyxiation?
Not exactly. Obviously.
That was not supposed to be a segue.
No, I had a buddy in high school who used to do that trick, but he would take his ball chain necklace that we wore in the 90s in high school, and he would inhale it.
Do it with know? That.
Right.
Yeah.
And then kind of floss.
Yeah. I've seen that with spaghetti.
Yes.
Spaghetti.
I would never think to do. So what is the ideal condom to use for this?
The video I watched was low on details and high on tense action. So I don't know.
High on tense action. Yes.
The condom probably works because it will fill your whole nostril pretty easily and you can probably suck it through your sinuses.
Yeah.
Easily.
I mean, I guess it's like...
I mean, do you want that?
It's educational. It teaches you about your anatomy, but I don't know why. You could just look in a book, right?
Yeah. That's gross. Why did you tell us about this?
I'm sorry.
That was horrible.
All right.
I have a second meme of the week.
Go for it. Please. Clear the air.
This is gizoogle.net, which I just showed everyone in the house before the show we started recording. So this is a website that will translate other websites into Snoop Dogg style fashizzle dizzle type language. So I got the Wikipedia entry for Wi-Fi from Gizoogle, which is... just read a bit of it. The Wi-Fi Alliance defines Wi-Fi as any wireless local area network shizzle that is based on the Electrical Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers standards. But fuck that shiznit, yo. The word on the street is that since most modern wireless LANs is based on these standards, the term Wi-Fi is used up in general gangsta as a synonym for wireless LAN.
That was an unusual combination of words.
I find this website hilarious. Anyway.
Yeah.
Is it only search engine results that come back? In the
no, line? No. You can just put in any web address and it will translate the entire web page.
So if we were to look up an article on ESPN about the NFL draft, which is currently going, they would discuss the draft in Snoop.
Snoop speak.
Yeah.
There's so much potential here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another one of my favorite website filter sites is, was it like Baconator or something, that all it does is just drop a big slice of bacon on any website you're on? I don't know. That's
nice.
That's all it takes for me. So I had news, but it's really more of a feature, the Justin and I thing. That was next on my list. I don't know. Are we ready to go to that, or should we save that?
No. We got to save that.
Okay. I don't. The only other news I had was that Mama Bear app. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, let's talk about that. I mean, there's other major events since the last time we podcasted. But yeah, let's talk about this app. This is interesting.
Okay. So, Robin, I think you have a better handle on exactly how it works. So, can you explain roughly what it does?
So we were in Florida last week.
That's right. How was Florida?
Visiting Mike's mom.
Right.
It was fine, actually. It was not overly hot and humid, and it only rained one day.
But that was the day you were at Epcot.
Right.
And so it rained a lot.
We bought ponchos because it rained a lot.
And we still have them.
Epcot poncho.
Gotta keep those Mickey Epcot ponchos.
Yeah. Epcot poncho sounds like a foreign film actor.
Anyway, so Mike's mom watches a lot of local news.
Yes.
Yes. And they were reporting on this story on this app called Mama Bear, and it's a two-part app. One part you install on your phone, and the other part you install on your child's phone. And I'm presuming this is for like teenage
like
children.
3-year-old and up.
Yeah, right. 3 and up with their iPhones.
Any child that would have a smartphone.
Yeah.
And it reports back to the parent's phone where the child is, if they've gone to school, if they've used a hateful word in a text message, if they've been tagged in a photo on Facebook, if they're speeding in their car, if they've gone to a restricted location, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So basically anywhere or anything you do.
Yeah.
And I was kind of horrified that it was a thing.
Why were you horrified?
Because it sounded like Big Brother.
Yeah.
I was going to say replaced by Mama Bear.
Right, yeah. Right.
Yeah, but the commercial, though, was obviously painting it in a positive light and saying, you know, basically, you know, it's worry-free, it's less worry-filled parenting. Like, the more you know, the less you worry. And my immediate gut reaction to that was, no, the more you know, the more you worry. Like, right. You know, or at least just, there's a balance, you know?
It was just like extreme helicopter parenting.
Right.
This is interesting. I'm almost 100% in favor of this app.
Oh man.
Wow.
I'm down with this.
You are the one parent here. All right.
Yeah.
How can you be 100% against for this?
Well, so I mean, the one argument that is relevant against this would be
where's the trust, Charles?
The trust one, right?
Yeah.
The trust one is, I mean, that's a real thing. That's a legitimate, you know, I don't know if that's how you introduce this. But actually, one question I have is technical, because I don't think iOS would let an app, the client app, just be alive all the time and reporting on all other apps. So I have to imagine it's Android only, would be my guess.
I'm pretty sure it's iOS as well.
Because I don't think you can
run... I didn't
run...
actually watch the commercial. I just saw the news ad.
I'm not actually sure how that works, so that'd be interesting to find out. Yeah. But
presuming it does.
Yeah. Assuming it does. They...
Mama Bear.
Okay. Yeah, the trust one is a real thing. So it's like, you know, maybe this is something that you put in place if your child doesn't, you know, has misbehaved in some way or something like that. Or like, you know, you let the kid misbehave once and then if they misuse the car, then they don't get to use the car. Or if they misuse the phone, then they don't get to use the phone, right? You've given them the phone. But as the parent who has given the child the phone... I think it's totally reasonable to keep track of your kid, right? Like it depends greatly on how old the child is, right? How much, you know, rule breaking they're apt to do. Mm-hmm. But I basically am fine with parents surveilling their kids as much as they feel is necessary.
I'm just thinking about like if this had existed when I was 14 and I was an incredibly nerdy, did nothing wrong child, but I would have been really resentful.
Sure.
Knowing that.
Well, it's the lack of trust as someone right. who was trustworthy. And I also was a well-behaved kid. I would have resented the lack of trust.
Yeah.
I would have too.
And it would have forced me into a rebellious situation.
I don't think that's true. I don't think you would have.
I would have done what I would have done anyway. I just would have been.
I mean,
right.
You know,
phone at home.
I almost feel like the more we talk about this, I almost feel like we're assuming that this is something that like every parent should use for every kid. But it you know, it really feels more like this is something that you would eventually arrive at the decision to use as an app. This is not a preventative measure. This is a
right.
post-mentative measure. You know, this is like, okay, I can't really trust my kid anymore. Oh my God, there's technology that helps me keep an eye on him. This is good. Not like perfect Robin child. Oh, well, you know, your parents would never use something like this because they don't need to.
Well, they would do it in a protective sense rather than mm-hmm. a overbearing sense. They would want to know if you were abducted or something, right. where to locate you.
It's basically like tagging your kid. Like, you know, shoot them with a dart with a tag and then follow them where they go. You know?
By the way, looked it up. It's on Apple. It is a free app. It presently has 31 reviews. And it is rated 3 out of 5 stars.
It's very beta.
The average age of those rating is probably 13, 14 years old.
So the giving a kid access to the internet is
a scary thing now
in and of itself an act of extreme trust mm-hmm. because smartphone access to the internet is access that you can't directly monitor, right? Like right. most the general wisdom when it comes to parenting right now in the internet is like your kid does not get to have a computer in their room. They can use the family computer that's in the living room where everyone can see it, and right. Because there's horrific shit on the internet, and you have to be really careful, not least of which is our podcast.
And as far as I understand from looking at my cousins' Facebook who have older children, like almost everybody gets some sort of iDevice at like 10.
Yeah.
Like there are kids in elementary
That's
school
nuts.
With iPhones and
which
iPods.
Which is kind of terrifying.
Yeah.
I feel that if I had a kid who was in high school, I would not be providing a smartphone.
Uh-huh.
I'd be providing like a flip phone without internet capability.
Yeah. So I have...
Yeah, but you don't have one.
Have one what?
A flip phone.
No, I wouldn't need to. I have earned the right to look at porn on my phone.
I'm a grown-ass man.
Okay, so what if your kid gets a job
and buys, his own,
buys his own phone?
Well, yes, if that happens... Obviously, you can't stop that. There are plenty of things that you can't stop your kid from doing. The point is, we all made it. We all grew up. You know, we're all breathing.
Speak for yourself, man. Oh, wait.
Yeah, there it is. Okay, I didn't realize that. Apparently,
you
I
can
was
hear
a,
it now, can't you? Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that basically this thing is, if you're going to give your kid a phone early, that's probably not a good choice, but if you are, this might be a way to police their use of the phone and you'd be a little bit safer, right? So I have one of the people who I work with or I used to work with, you know, has young kids, and gave them phones. I don't think they were iPhones, but they were phones on which they could text. And their rule was basically like, I am giving you this. You can use it for text messages. You know what's appropriate and what isn't, but I get to look at your texts whenever I want to, mm-hmm. right? And so that was their rule. Like, anytime that they asked, the kids had to hand over the phone and had to be ready to do that, and they could go through their whole, you know, text history and look at all that stuff.
And that seems like the right level of parenting.
Right.
Whereas, like, I guess I think of the Mama Bear app, and I just think, like, yeah, installing something like that is basically telling your kid, I don't trust you.
It's a little big brother. It certainly is. But
like and also, as a kid, I mean, how would you feel about your parents saying, okay, we're now going to start using this technology where we know X, Y, and Z about you? Like, how would you feel about that? Like, what would you think they thought about you if they felt it was necessary to use something like that?
Well, if it's in a vacuum, like knowing nothing else, it's probably draconian if there's no particular reason. But if there is a reason, like, you know, it can monitor the speed the kid's traveling, and therefore you can tell if your kid's been speeding in the car, right? If your kid got a speeding ticket, you might use this as a punishment and say, like, okay, look, you got a speeding ticket. I'm now going to install this on your phone, and I will know if you speed.
I do think that's a great idea. I do. And I am a perpetual speeder. I don't think there's a time when I'm not speeding. My car is speeding without
Justin's
me right
going
now.
85 miles an hour right now.
It's just driving around the complex.
That's pretty amazing.
It's
just going along.
Vroom. But as a kid, I was a dangerous speeder.
Yeah.
Like, I am a safe speeder now. Yeah. But, you know, I wouldn't want my kid to drive like I did. You know, I feel like I got lucky. I've never
You're
had an
such
accident.
A hypocrite, Dad.
Oh.
So would you use this app, Justin?
I'd use this app for the speed.
You would use parts of it, but not the whole shebang.
Yeah, yeah. There'd be a degree of trust. I would trust him not to use parts of the app, and he would trust me that I'm telling them the truth when I don't use parts of the app.
Yeah.
I would consider using it for certain, mm-hmm. you know, properties, and not want to use it just for my own peace of mind for others. I think parents are better left in the dark sometimes, and I know the only parent probably disagrees, but I do think parents are better left in the dark sometimes because kids are going to be kids. And they're going to do things that maybe you don't think are smart, but that's what becomes a learning experience, mm-hmm. you know, and you mature through, you know, disappointments and mistakes made and consequences. So I kind of feel like you have to let your kids out there. You have to let them make some mistakes, you know?
Yeah, I think that's right.
You only learn through pain.
Well, that is dark.
Wow.
Shit. That is fucking dark. Robin, Werner Herzog over there. Jesus. All of nature wants to kill man.
I learned my ABCs through
you
blood.
You only learn through pain. Yikes.
I want to hug you through the microphone. I'm sorry.
Speaking of learning through pain, this is an awkward segue. The Boston Marathon was bombed.
That is an awkward segue. An
awkward segue. And that was bullshit.
That was a neck snapper there. That was horrible. The weird parts about it are all the kind of Miranda rights issues that popped up after that. Before they even captured the guy, mm-hmm. Lindsey Graham had tweeted that the last thing we wanted to do is to read the suspect Miranda rights. Like, there were a whole group of people who were directly advocating that the suspect not be read, not be Mirandized, not be informed of his, you know, his right to remain silent, and to treat whoever was captured as an enemy combatant and, you know, question them for intelligence purposes. And that's weird and fucked up. Like, I don't know. It's the thing that's weird about it to me is, like, the Boston Marathon stuff, it was viewed and is treated as terrorism, mm-hmm. a terrorist act, where the Newtown massacre is viewed as a crime.
As a shooting.
Right, a heinous crime. But the Newtown, which was more fatal, like more deaths,
seven
more wounding.
Eight, nine times.
It's like drastically worse in mm-hmm. terms of loss of life, right?
Mm-hmm.
But somehow people view it totally differently. I don't know what the difference is. It's just that
it's
guns and not bombs.
Yeah.
Like,
pretty much. It's because it's covert. When you set off a bomb, it is a large explosive device that has a general radius and is not specific. when you're shooting a gun, you're shooting at a target. When you set off a bomb, it goes off, and then who happens to be there happens to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, it's going to be in a public place. Typically, it's going to be while the person, unless it's a suicide bomb, you know, the person who laid the trap is away. And it's meant to say you're never safe. Like, the whole act of terrorism is to try and drive fear into the people that were not affected as well. You know, as mm-hmm. in, I can't walk down the street. I can't stand on this corner. Personally, I don't think that the Marathon bombing was an act of terrorism. And I had problems when we declared the war on terror.
Right.
Because how is that defined? You know, how do you define what terrorism is? Any act of violence that scares people, you know?
If the Newtown shooters had been, young Arab men,
mm-hmm.
right, they definitely would have said that it was terrorism.
Absolutely.
But we didn't. Because they weren't, right? Yeah. Or he wasn't.
The Oklahoma City bombings, it's considered a terrorist act, right?
That one is,
Timothy McVeigh.
Right. That one's called domestic terrorism.
But and a bombing.
Again a bombing.
Right. Yeah.
Versus
a
gun. That's really... Right. I never thought about the difference between that, mm-hmm. like guns versus bombs.
I think because there's no sight. A gun shoots in one direction.
Right.
You know, a bomb goes off and whoever's within the radius is affected. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's more so what it is.
It's less controlled, more mm-hmm. chaotic. Like, it could harm no one or it could harm a bunch of people, whereas you shooting a gun at a person will kill them most likely.
Hmm.
You know, it seems more almost... You know, but back to the Miranda rights thing. Yeah, it's funny. Like, well, I'm wondering, in these other cases, like Timothy McVeigh or Newtown or, you know, any of the school shootings that have occurred, did this debate come up with them as well?
I think it's fairly
recent. I don't remember
hearing
it any other time.
It's recent that they started using this as a justification, the enemy combatant designation as a justification for holding people on. Like, you don't have the responsibility as a government to read Miranda rights to enemy soldiers, for example. Like, if your countries are at war and your soldiers on the battlefield, you can just detain people. They don't really have
but
rights.
He's a
They're
a citizen.
Right.
And we're not at war with Chechnya.
But that's the thing is that if you give these, if you say that we're at war with terror, we have a war on terror, then you can start to claim that, like, this isn't, quote, enemy combatant because he's a terrorist. And just because he's a citizen.
You're changing the conversation to frame it how you want it.
It's
a specifically broad description of the enemy.
Right.
They give you the leeway to make the decisions when you want to make the decisions, not, you know, take away people's rights.
Yeah. So, and it's, you know, you always have the Miranda rights, right? It's not like by being told about them, you get them. Like, you have them.
It's like copyright.
You are required to be informed of them, and he wasn't. They was questioned for like 18 hours, I believe, without being read his Miranda rights. So that's what the upshot was. They didn't actually read him his rights. They held him in this nebulous state, and he was Mirandized 18 hours after they did a whole bunch of questioning and interrogation. It's hard to say, like, that guy really deserved a fair shake or something because, you know, you bombed a place. And one of the things is, like, the only thing that happens, as I understand it, is that they then can't use whatever they learned against you in court, right?
It's inadmissible. Whatever was discussed prior to.
So that's, I mean, I guess I see that as one way around this. Like, if you're not going to read someone their Miranda rights, you can just decide, like, getting whatever that intelligence is more important than having it to use against them as a weapon in the court case.
I've heard, though, of misdemeanor cases that were entirely thrown out due to lack of the Miranda.
Mm-hmm. Well, completely dismissed?
Completely dismissed. And I'm not sure. I really don't know what the ground rules on that are. You want to say that it would make sense. It would be whatever's discovered from the time of arrest or original detainment until the time the rights are read, that would be inadmissible.
Yeah.
I don't understand the situation. It's where where the entire case is thrown out.
Yeah.
And maybe that's only things that I've seen in Law and Order. Maybe that's not real life. I'm a criminal justice major. I should know this.
Are you really?
Yeah. It was a way to graduate in 4 years and not have to pay for a fifth year.
I have an art degree. I understand.
Nice.
Language.
Charles?
Business.
Boring.
Business.
Money.
Snoresville.
Mm. When it comes to terrorism, though, I think of an organization. It's organized. What organized crime does, you know, think mafia and whatnot, they do their best not to get called out. They do their best not to be known. And, you know, it's organized crime. They're trying to make as much money as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, the goal is money. Terrorism is organized crime where the goal is to upset the balance, create chaos, and injure and maim and kill as many people as possible.
Yeah.
The goal is to be known. They declare themselves responsible for the act. It is organized crime with a completely separate goal. This, to me, I mean, like I said, is he actually a citizen?
Mm-hmm.
He's been...
Yeah.
All right. You know, we have citizens that are performing acts of domestic, quote-unquote, terrorism, but really what it is it's an act of violence.
Yeah.
You know?
That's my view, yeah. Basically. I mean, I don't know. I'm glad that it's over. I'm really glad this did not turn on into like the next decade long mm-hmm. hunt
we
for
watched
Bin
a lot
Laden.
Of local news that day too.
Mm-hmm. There was plenty of CNN being like, we're here and we're going to continuously show this video of all these cop cars with their lights flashing and people walking around and nothing actually happening. And yeah. We will bring it to you live.
I have to say, despite Reddit's, incorrect identification of that guy that was later found dead.
Right. That is so crazy.
That was so crazy.
Yeah.
They provided excellent coverage of the police scanners and what was actually happening and not what CNN was theorizing on.
Well, CNN and like the New York Post were just reporting what was on Reddit. Like, that's the crazy part, you know?
Yeah.
New York Post put those two guys on the front page and like identified them as suspects.
Yeah.
That is fucked up. Yeah. I cannot believe that. And now that kid has been found dead. One of those two kids.
But do they know why he's
dead
or how he died?
He's been missing since the bombing occurred.
So they don't know how he died? They just found him dead?
No.
It's at least plausible that someone saw him on the cover of the New York Post and was like, oh, I got the guy, you know? Or, I mean, who knows? So,
but that's fucked up, man.
But there were like four different users the day they were actually hunting them down that were like just tirelessly posting updates, and I was pretty impressed at how efficient and
exhaustive,
non-fluffy and exhaustive the coverage was.
Dude, 2013, where Reddit and Twitter is where you get your news from.
Yeah,
that's the truth. That is what is happening.
First-hand eyewitness.
Yeah,
as opposed to filtered media.
Right, mm-hmm. It's pretty sweet. I think
I had a couple random things happen. One that made me love life and one that made me totally hate life and think that I was dumb and worthless.
Let's do hate life first. Okay. So we can follow it up with a good
hate
thing.
Life was,
yeah.
I was in my car with my wife.
No research, Justin.
Her car.
So random. No, sorry.
Had my bike on the back of the car.
Hold on. You can do research now. We amended that.
Oh, really?
Well, it's unofficial. Because we've done research, so apparently we've revealed it.
Yeah,
please ignore my previous statement.
I'm new. I did not know.
No, it's okay.
We previously had a no research, but that's sort of gone by the wayside.
That was a soft rule. Yeah.
Anyway, I had my bike attached to the back of the car, and it's a bike rack that's on the back. It's like suction cups that attach it to the back window, so it's perpendicular to the car and vertical. Right, so a wheel sticks up above the top of the roof line, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And we were pulling into our house, and we like turned down the alley that gets us to our garage, and from there to our garage, we have to drive, I don't know, 45 feet, the width of one house to get in, and then wait for the garage door to go up, and then pull in. And from the moment that we turned onto the alleyway, I was thinking, my bike is sticking up above the roof of the car. We're going to drive into the garage. My bike's going to hit the garage.
Yeah.
That's going to happen.
That's bad.
I should tell Jessica to stop the car. I should say that to her. And I didn't say anything. Like, my brain's fucking out to get me. We just drove straight in, and the bike hit the roof, and it tore the suction cups off and it fell over and it like scratched her car and all this. I was like, brain, what the hell, brain? Like, you were, and it wasn't like a subconscious thing or, you know, it wasn't like this was a feeling I had. I was consciously thinking about it. And it was literally like that kind of thing. It's like time just stood still for a while. I'm like, bike's going to hit the roof. I was like, I should say something to Jessica. I should tell her to stop. Nope, didn't. Just like ran to, I was like, What the hell? Like, why are we so dumb with that stuff like that?
Have you found that that's happened to you in other moments as well?
Yeah, I mean, occasionally that'll happen. Just like, it's like, I knew it was going to happen, and it happened. Why didn't I do something different?
That'll happen to me when there's another, like, dangerous situation approaching, whether it be something falling from a counter, or you recognize that someone is walking.
Or a mug falling out.
Yeah, of exactly. A cabinet.
Yep. That just happened.
Yep. Did just happen.
You see it happen, you're like, I should catch that. I didn't catch it.
What's the deal? What now happened? It's broken.
Now it's broken. I didn't want that. No one wants that.
In the time that I saw it beginning to fall from the cabinet until it hit the counter, I mean, what was that? Less than a second, probably, yeah. Right? I had the thought in my mind, oh no, a mug is falling. Yeah. I should catch it. Wait, I'm too far away. Mike, do something. Less than a second. It's amazing how quickly the mind will...
You know, yeah. I think part of this also, especially with your example, Chaz, like, I feel like your subconscious, or maybe even your unconscious, thought, without you being aware of it, obviously, that Jess would somehow know to stop.
Maybe.
But that was never addressed. Like, you felt that, which is why your conscious didn't actually do anything. Like, I think I probably thought, that cup is falling, I should catch it, somehow it will be saved without my intervention. Oh, wait, that's impossible.
Yeah, it's like, you're just hoping it's gonna... Yeah.
I'm just hoping it will... I don't want to do anything.
Yeah, I think that was maybe part of it. Part of me was also thinking, maybe it will fit. Like, maybe it won't hit the top. Maybe it'll just clear. Right. And part of me was like, maybe we'll see. Like, maybe it'll be really exciting if that happens. Like,
maybe my bike will defy the law
Let's check it out.
Physics.
Do you think the fact
I don't know
that
how high it's sticking up.
Do you think maybe the fact that you were in a car had something to do with it? The fact that you're a passenger in the car.
Yeah.
Backseat driving or telling your wife in an instant, what if it would clear and you scream, stop, stop, stop? She now has leverage against you for future.
Chaz is going crazy. Right.
Yeah. Your brain will do stupid stuff. So anyway, that was dumb. But the thing that was awesome was Charlie and I were watching an episode of Top Gear, and he looked at a car that was doing a major power slide, and he turned to me and he goes, "That's oversteer." And I was like, "Yes, it is oversteer." And I tweeted that he had said that, and I'm like, I've never loved him so much. I was like so psyched. God, aww, it was a great moment.
That's a good feeling.
So good.
How old is he now?
He's going to be 3 in May.
Okay.
Yeah. That's and sweet. He knows what oversteer is, which is awesome.
You've done him well.
Yeah. Actually, I didn't teach him that. He learned that from a different episode of... That was what was kind of cool about it, is that he learned it from a different episode of Top Gear, where to talk about how neutral some cars' handling was... They showed a car understeering and they showed a car oversteering and they described them specifically. And, but it was, I mean, that whole segment was maybe, you know, 90 seconds of this episode. And we're watching another one. And he's like, that's oversteer. It's like, yes, you're learning and you're learning something so cool. So.
That's awesome.
Sorry, I'm not laughing at you.
No, I know you're not. You're laughing at how awesome my kid is. Anything exciting happening with you guys this week?
Besides going to theme parks,
We went to we went to Harry Potter World.
How is that?
Oh yeah,
is it cool?
It was super awesome and really well done and incredibly small.
Really,
It's just one.
That's what she said. Literally,
okay. It's just one little narrow road of Hogsmeade. Like the Three Broomsticks is on one side, and then they have like a gift shop and the Owl Post and Ollivander's on the other side, and then the castle at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And each of those little shops, except for the Three Broomsticks, which was pretty reasonably sized, was really, really tiny. Like, you're just kind of like shimmying around the room because there's nowhere to walk. And the castle itself has a ride, which was really cool. We only had to wait like 45 minutes for that. I read that the line can be like 4 hours.
What kind of ride was it?
It was like Indiana Jones meets Haunted Mansion meets Star Tours meets Soaring Over California. It was really cool.
So you just named like 4 of the 5 most popular rides all rolled into one.
Yeah.
It was basically. like you're on a bench and you're moving along a track like the Haunted Mansion, except your bench is lifted up on a robot arm, mm-hmm. and it's lifting you over the screen, cool. like soaring over California, and then you're like moving around and flying as you're going wow. around the castle. Okay. It's really cool.
Is it a speed ride at all, or is it more?
No, you weren't going fast.
Is there like
the
a
Wii
factor, like a you know?
There
were some drops and weaves, and
you're constantly moving,
like Star Tours in that moving. Respect.
Yeah, you're yeah. bouncing around, you're and they pop up like there's a Dementor that pops up in front of you, and hot or no, there was a dragon that blows hot air at you or something.
Yeah, it was you could tell it was really like the culmination cool. of several rides modernized essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
Recommended.
That was really awesome.
When you go inside the shops, are they selling things? Could you buy?
Oh yeah, you
wand?
Could buy wizard robes and you could buy wands, and we bought an owl. I bought a baseball.
That has a head that moves around 360 degrees.
Really? You, can like, you didn't buy a wand?
They were like $30 for a wand. What was I going to do with a wand?
The robes are like over 100. Yeah. So.
Wow.
Not that I would wear that. I don't know why I would do with a $100 robe.
And we also had read that during the summer when it gets really busy, they actually have to like close the land off and like issue tickets to people. Like, come back to this area in two hours. Right. It's too busy. And it's just really tiny. And the rest of the entire park was nearly dead.
Huh.
Like, but we waited 10 to 20 minutes for anything else.
And we drank butterbeer.
Which was terrible.
Which was, Robin coined it perfectly, it was like drinking cake icing.
Liquefied, like, tub of cake icing.
It was alcoholic?
It's like butterscotch. No. Oh. Butterscotch flavored?
I don't know what it literally, like, I took a like tub of vanilla frosting. Ugh. And was it like liquefied it and was drinking it. It was pretty gross.
Butterbeer from good. The Harry Potter universe.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what they drink when they go to Hogsmeade. Oh. It's like the non-alcoholic kids drink.
I always thought they were drinking beer.
Dude, no. They're kids.
Yeah. It's like
maybe they got a higher alcohol tolerance.
It's root beer.
Yeah. It's like, as opposed to a lower drinking age.
It's
well, there are times, you know, they could have been 18 in that last year. I never
That's
read
true, book. But they drank it all the time.
But they were drinking butterbeer
It was not particularly palatable, but we got it anyway because
it was interesting.
We were there.
Yeah. It was a little too sweet. It was not the best thing.
What else did we do? We went to the Kennedy Space Center.
That was cool.
Which was cool, but I'd been there before in the 90s when the space shuttle program actually was space shuttle.
When we had a space program.
Right.
It was a little
and
weird.
There was a certain tinge of like depressed, like, we used to have space. that existed now that did not exist then.
Partly dismantled launching pad.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was sad.
That is sad. Why would they dismantle it?
They don't have a space
shuttle.
They're
not using it anymore.
Okay, so why not keep it just in case?
Well, they still have a launching pad. They're changing to a different style. So they have to take off all the space shuttle accoutrement.
They're going to go to rockets because the space shuttle didn't actually save any money.
Right? Yeah, it's not...
It's like $1 billion to launch one shuttle. Yeah.
It's not really as depressing as you think because it's not like...
It was a little depressing.
They stopped doing space. They're just not doing the shuttle program because, like you said, it was hugely expensive. And now, I mean, we've got the ISS, and we're sending stuff to Mars, which I guess, you know, you can't really send a shuttle to Mars yet, so there's no point in...
It's not quite the same.
Yeah. It doesn't have that heyday of, you know, obviously of Race to the Moon or even the 80s, 90s, you know, it doesn't feel that way. It feels more like a museum now than a active community. So
it
that
belongs in a museum.
Yeah. It's a little weird.
We went to Epcot and got rained on a lot.
Bought ponchos.
Epcot poncho.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we went on a bunch of...
It's like a Portuguese
I won't even say the rides. We saw a bunch of cheesy, like, China and 360 degrees movies because they were indoors and it was not raining indoors.
Right. Mm-hmm. The test track drive or ride
was
kind of neat.
Pretty neat.
What is this?
Most of people who come through Disney World now, when they get their tickets, they have RFID embedded in them.
Mm-hmm.
Which we didn't because Mike's mom had gotten them for us at the
commissary.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So they gave us a little RFID card in line. So you, as part of the line, you go into a design studio and you have a big touch screen and you get to like draw lines for a car. Like you, and then you, so you draw the outline of what the body should be and change the color and the wheels and make it have stripes and stuff. And it's stored on this little, on your card or your ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get ready to get into the ride vehicle, which is generic ride vehicle, you swipe your card again and it like loads it into like, okay, these passengers have made these cars. And then the test track, is like you're testing your vehicles out in the, oh, we're avoiding this truck and we're braking suddenly and stuff like, and then in each section, like your cars pop up on a screen on the ride and say like, oh, this was the most efficient car. And, you know, this was the most powerful car in this section. So that was kind of cool. And then after you get off the ride, which was fine, and we got on in the tiny window that it did not rain because it's closed while it's raining.
They're actual vehicles that are driving?
Yeah, it's just like a generic ride car.
Okay, so it's like outdoors.
There's one section of the ride outdoors. Most of it's inside.
And it's moving. It's actually a vehicle moving around, not a Star Tours type.
Right, no, it's an actual car.
Yeah.
And then at the end, when you get off, they have
like a scorecard.
A play area. Yeah, scorecard. Right, yeah. And then there's like a play area where you can swipe your card again, and they load up like a little virtual racetrack, and you can drive your little car around with a bunch of other people. It was cute. It was fun.
Yeah, I have to say, I mean, compared to...
It was a big Chevy ad.
Yeah. Most of the rides are sponsored by some major corporation. Comparing it to Universal Studios, like the Incredible Hulk ride, because there's a part of Universal Studios that's like all like Marvel superheroes. So you go on the Incredible Hulk ride, which is a serious roller coaster, like one that goes really fast, goes upside down, does spirals, all that kind of stuff.
I stayed on the ground and had ice cream.
Yeah. You know, Disney doesn't really make rides like that, but they're all about the experience.
Not in the U.S.
Oh,
so Euro Disney
has crazy rides?
Well, Euro Disney's Space Mountain is a pretty serious roller coaster.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, even the Disneyland...
It doesn't have any loops, but it's pretty... It's like legit roller coaster.
Yeah, well, even the one out here in California, Disneyland's Space Mountain is not... It's not a tame ride, but it's not an Incredible Hulk go upside down.
Yeah, it's not upside down.
So the Incredible Hulk ride was really cool. It did something really interesting that a roller coaster I've been on has never done before. So you know the part of the roller coaster where your initial incline, which is very slow, and then you get to the top, and then that usually starts the fast part. So this actually like starts going up slowly, and you hear Bruce Banner like talking, saying like, "Oh, I think this time I'm going to get this experiment right," because you're in some kind of experimental vehicle. And, you know, it's like, I almost got it. Oh, no, I didn't get it. And at that moment, which is about 20% up the thing, it immediately floors it to full speed.
And it just fires you up.
Just fires you up the thing. And it's fast the whole time. I've never been on. And it was totally unexpected. It was the best like feeling ever, not knowing that was coming.
Did they warn you to have your head back against the
seat? They had lots of warnings. They even told you to not wear glasses.
Right.
Which was interesting, and I kept watching people coming back from the ride to see whether anybody was actually taking them off, and there were plenty of people wearing them, and when I got on it, no one told me to take them off, so I just left it on.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. In general, I mean, the whole thing, you're being pushed back the whole time with G's, like, you know, you're even though when you go upside down, your glasses are not going to fall off.
It's not so much the glasses as it is the whiplash. There's a theme park, a Paramount Studios theme park in Virginia called King's Dominion.
And they
had something that's similar to that. It wasn't going uphill when it hit the gas. It was at a dead stop when it hit the gas. So it doesn't go up. It goes straight, but it takes off like a rocket.
Mm.
And they wouldn't hit the button until everyone's head was flush against the back of the seat to prevent whiplash injuries.
Mm. Well, that's the thing is you're going up an incline, so you're already being pushed back.
True, but
you're not going to be leaning forward as you go up an incline.
Some people do, you know, if they're talking to their friends who are the seat in front of them, or if they're looking off to the side one way or the other.
I suppose
just to limit their liability, I'd be surprised if they didn't have a sign or something.
No, I mean, there were plenty of warnings. I'm sure one of the warnings was always keep your head back. Yeah.
Universal was much bigger on you cannot have anything with you on these rides. Like, no bags, nothing. Like, if it's not in a pocket, you can't have it.
Yeah. Do not sue us.
We did prepare for that. So I didn't bring my purse into the park. Like, I was just like, I got a phone and a wallet, the end.
Nice.
Which made it easier because they had lockers at the beginning of every ride, and there was always these big, like, blobular crowds trying to lock things up. We didn't have that problem to Epcot.
Justin, anything exciting happened?
Not nearly that exciting.
No. Cool.
Hard to top that.
And I turned 30.
Oh yeah!
Yes.
Happy birthday on air.
Yes. Damn you, Facebook.
Damn you, Facebook.
Apparently, Facebook missed my birthday.
Failed. There's some privacy settings that have to be worked out there.
Mm.
Let's go on to non-game culture business? Any non-gamey culture, music, video,
I have a bunch.
TV, a bunch.
Let me just start with one real quick, so yeah, I only have one contribution here.
Yes.
Saw Oblivion. Very, very good movie. Now, when I say good movie, I mean good as in the theatrical experience good movie. You know, obviously.
Watching at home on your TV, not as exciting.
It could probably still be as good, but it's one that I saw on IMAX, and I'm glad I paid the money for it.
3D?
Not 3D.
Okay.
Which was another bonus to me, because 3D movies tend to be tinted glasses. You lose some of the color display. Mm-hmm. I saw Life of Pi in 3D, and I really wish I hadn't.
Yeah.
So much of the visual of that movie was in its colors. In this movie, same thing. There's lots of sunsets and contrast, and that would be lost if mm-hmm. you saw it in 3D. It's really not necessary. I didn't miss it at all. What stood out about this movie, though, other than the visuals, unique-ish storyline, considering it could have been extremely generic, mm-hmm. and the music was awesome. Cool. It was very much like the Tron Legacy music.
Nice.
Which we love.
Did Daft Punk write the music
Daft
for it?
Daft Punk did not write the music. But I feel like if Daft Punk had a prodigy, no pun intended, it would be these people who did this. The same director, though, as Tron Legacy.
You should have intended that pun, because that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
I kind of did intend it.
Did the music...
I should have owned it.
Did the music start a fire in your heart?
It made me want to...
Prodigy, Firestarter.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
I thought that might have been a little oblique, so...
That joke
Thank
smacked,
you for not
smacked
leading
my
it.
Bitch up.
It did. It smack, yep.
Yes.
That's the only other Prodigy song I know.
Anyway, see the movie and don't wear headphones.
Cool.
Or earplugs or whatever.
Nice. It looks amazing. The trailer looks incredible.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, the movie itself is 3.5 out of 5. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say it's awesome, but visually...
But in the theater experience.
Yes, as a theatrical experience, it was solid.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Sweet. Robin, anything?
I watched the entirety of the BBC series Call the Midwife. And then... bought the book and then read the entire book on the plane.
What is it? What's that about?
It is a young, I think she's probably like 22 or 23 girl who goes to work in the East End of London in the 1950s as a midwife. They work out of like a nunnery. There we go.
An Indian breadery?
Get the
so some yes, some of okay. some of the midwives are sister midwives, and some of them are just nurse midwives. And they're just on call delivering babies. They delivered like 80 to 100 babies a month for Jeez. This neighborhood of London. And in the book they talked about this. After birth control was brought onto the market in the early 60s, they dropped to 4 to 5 a month.
Wow.
And that boggled my mind. But I really loved the series, and
cool.
It's the first season.
Is it drama?
Yeah, first season's on Netflix. Second season's on PBS right now.
Nice. Is it better than Downton Abbey?
I'm not sure what could be, but it's a very good substitute. While
Dude,
Downton Abbey's
high
off
praise.
The air.
Can we talk about season 3 ending spoilers? Downton Abbey spoilers.
I've never seen an episode.
Do you plan to see it?
Do you care if we?
Okay, then we won't spoil it.
Okay.
The thing that happens at the end.
WTF?
Yeah.
WTF.
With the thing, and
well,
you're
I,
like,
see,
really?
I knew
really?
That was coming, because I had read that
now
he was
I'm
gone.
I'm sorry I gave away my disdain.
So cheap. It's such
it
a
was
cheap,
so, it was
such
so
a cheap way to make drama.
They use sex
OMG.
Truck.
Well, but what's his face, the writer?
Julian Fellowes.
Yeah, Julian Fellowes, I think he is obviously not above being cheap.
Well, no, I mean, I had read that they wanted to bring him back for a couple, one or two episodes of the next season. Mm-hmm. And the actor was like, nope.
Yeah.
Nope, nope, nope.
Well, okay. Whatever. Yeah, I guess at that point you can't.
What could that mean,
you have to figure
Justin?
It out.
Is Julian Fellowes the director, the writer, or the actor?
He's the showrunner.
Yeah.
Okay.
And writer, I think. Okay. Like head writer or something.
And he said that like.
So basically now I just don't know which guy it is dies right. at the end of season 3.
That's, basically.
Yeah. And he said that like for the.
No. He gets shipped off to cooking school.
Oh, clearly.
Sorry.
Yeah. Such for a the cheap
below,
way to make
For the
drama.
Below stairs people, like, they can just get another job.
Right. Yeah.
And then they can be off the show that way. But
right,
the upstairs
right.
people are like...
They have to have really...
You have to really be gone.
Mm. Yeah.
You can
that's
be gone
true.
For, you know, 3 years, 1.5 on good behavior. They could do that.
They did that for a character.
No.
They had this whole prison story arc. Yeah.
Also...
Boring.
Mad Men.
Dude, Mad Men.
Dude, Mad Men.
Yeah.
You can
Holy
spoil
shit, that
for me.
Show,
okay.
man.
Go ahead and spoil it.
I don't want to, though. If you haven't watched it, it's totally worth watching.
I told Mike about this already, Charles, but you'll be interested. Yeah. This Mad Men podcast I listen to, which name I can't think of, but it's on the Bald Move podcast network. They were theorizing that, you know, in the opening sequence when he's falling, he's dying or whatever. They were talking about how, you know, Don Draper is living this fake existence, and how the popular theory is that that will be the end of the show, him like jumping off a building and committing suicide. And their theory was that it's the suicide of Don Draper, but that he'll have to start his life anew as someone else, because that's what he does. My mind was like,
yeah, yeah.
I really liked that.
I think they'll be smart about whatever they end up doing, because it's an incredibly smart show.
Yeah.
Is this decidedly the last season?
There's one more.
Yeah.
I think they go
this
up
is season
seven.
Six?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they'll probably do one more.
So it's kind of fun that I work at an ad agency now, because so Peggy works at J. Walter Thompson.
No, she doesn't. She works for that other guy.
Tim.
Right, but it's...
Tom
something.
Thom.
Whatever.
And they are presumably owned by... When they walked into the bar and celebrated...
No. Peggy's ad agency did not win that.
A third agency
there
won
was,
it. Neither
J. Walter
won
Thompson
it.
Did, but yeah. she didn't...
Yeah, she's
didn't
not part
them.
Of J. Walter. She's from some other...
Okay, agency. Yeah, so... They are referencing a bunch of... So I work for J. Walter Thompson.
Ah,
right?
Oh. Nice.
And they're talking... They're, like, referencing a bunch of, like, these agencies that I'm working with. They're, like, a couple shows ago, they were talking about something about blah, 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 DDB. And I was like, I was on a conference call with people from DDB today.
And then you had an old-fashioned...
Random. Yeah, yeah.
Living the dream, and then smoked a pack.
Yeah.
And then had an affair.
Drank a fifth of vodka. Yep. And yeah, that's how it works.
FYI, old fashions are bartenders' least favorite drinks. They're
really?
The most labor-intensive to make.
Hmm. Seersucker, downtown San Diego, has a kick-ass old fashioned. It's really good.
Apparently, in the last episode, one of them ordered an old Spanish, which was a reference to some other show that made it up.
That Tom Tim guy ordered
or something.
One.
Have you seen the Dante's Inferno reading of this this show?
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like every episode is
right.
a further it's ring. A
different level of hell.
Yes.
Deep.
It's very. Yeah.
And so you talked about, Mike, you have a bunch of things to talk
I got
about?
A bunch of things. So if we're talking about movies, I'll continue the segue. While we were in Florida, we watched three movies. We watched Butter.
Curious about that.
Which
was actually pretty interesting.
We liked it. The internet.
The internet
not
did not
so
like
crazy
it.
About that movie.
Never heard of it. What is it?
So
it's
did
butter
you,
carving, Charles, obviously.
Yeah. Did you see Election with Reese Witherspoon and Matthew Broderick?
No, but I vaguely know.
You should see that movie because that's an excellent movie.
Yeah.
This was very much in the same vein. It's like a small town, but big drama, dark humor, comedy kind of a thing. So it's Iowa. It's a state fair. There's a butter sculpting competition, and it's a movie about the people who enter it and their lives and how they intersect and the weirdness that goes on when people are a part of that.
Cool.
Was it similar to a Christopher Guest movie, or was it...
That's the thing. I thought it was Christopher Guest, but no, it's much more Alexander Payne.
Okay.
Much, much more. So don't go into it thinking it's going to be lighthearted. It's much harder edged and darker.
Guy? Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. But also The Election Guy.
And Descendants.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
So if you like Alexander Payne, you'll like this movie because it's the same kind of tropes.
Okay. All learning comes through Alexander Payne.
Yes. Yes. No, that's actually poignant. That actually sums it up
that
well.
Was, yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So, but I thought it was good. I thought it was pretty funny. It has some, it's got Ty Burrell from Modern Family. It's got Olivia Wilde. It's got Jennifer Garner.
The little girl was a good actress.
Yes. There's a little African-American girl who's the prodigy. Comes out of nowhere and is super awesome
at butter carving,
butter sculpting, prodigy. Carving, yeah. sculpting, modeling. We finally watched Jiro Dreams of Sushi.
Mm-hmm.
You and Josh
yep.
have talked about that a lot. I liked it, but I didn't love it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it could have been about half as long. It was a little slow. It might have been like a kick-ass episode of This American Life, but as a proper documentary, it
this
was
Japanese
just,
life
yeah this Japanese life, it was just I don't know, it was a little much. We kind of I think both Rob and I kind of lost interest in the last
yeah
like
I don't
minutes.
Think we even watched the last half hour
yeah that's fair
not
yeah,
arousing, I mean,
that makes sense
review.
Well,
it's
so
good enough
it was really interesting for like 45 minutes. Then I was like, what else is there to say?
Yeah. It'll either grab you or not, and you'll get the point as they did, like, and you'll get a sense of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And either it'll be something that's like, this is totally cool and I want to watch the end, or like, yeah, I got the point. I don't need to see anymore. Yeah.
It's very cool. Just a quick reiteration. It's about this guy in Japan who's basically been working on sushi his entire life. He has a restaurant. He has like basically the best sushi in Japan. People come, or in the world, people come there and pay like $300 to sit and eat his sushi.
It's a 3-star Michelin sushi restaurant.
Yeah.
It's in the subway. It's like in the corner of the subway. Yeah.
It's very small, very quaint. And it's the story of him, but also kind of more just about the restaurant and about his sons.
Yeah.
Who one of them left to start his own restaurant, and the other one is actually still working with his dad at the restaurant. Conceivably, he will take over once his dad dies.
Or retires.
Right. No, well, I don't know. I think Jiro will work until he dies.
That's kind of the impression that you got. Yeah, yeah. Was like,
he's a lifelong worker.
The son was kind of like, we thought he would retire like 10 years ago. And apparently he hasn't yet.
Well, yeah, because he had like a heart attack at some point, and they thought, well, that would be the end of it. Nope. Went right back to work. So, finally,
I'm so fascinated by people who can focus that hard on one thing.
Yeah.
Like, the example I always use is the people who are like Olympic triple jump champion. Mm-hmm. Like, this is such a random thing that is totally useless in life. Like, there's no use for triple jump, right? Hurdle, you can conceive of some uses, but triple jump, ridiculous. And yet there are people who train their entire lives to be good at it for that one moment. It's just like fascinating, that level of focus or dedication to...
I'm going to live in the past for a moment. I set my middle school record for triple jump when I was
Yes.
And then it was broken the very next year by a buddy of mine who went on to play Division I football at Temple.
Jerk.
Yeah.
We also saw Perks of Being a Wallflower, finally. Pretty good.
It's pretty good.
So Butter, I gave a 4 out of 5. Jiro Dreams of CSG, 3.5 out of 5. Perks of Being a Wallflower, 4 out of 5.
Wow.
I read the book, so I was watching the movie with that in mind, which is very uncommon for me because I don't really read novels very much. But
Mike.
Yes, Robin.
What about Marine 2?
Oh, God.
Did you watch Marine 2?
I was getting Marine 2. I was getting to Marine 2.
Is that John Cena?
Sorry.
Wait, are you telling me you know what this is?
I know what Marine is.
That's John Cena, right?
I have no idea.
Was John Cena. Marine 2 is where they plug in like Kevin Sorbo or something.
Oh,
no, it's not Kevin Sorbo, but that would be too much of a name for generic, broad-shouldered, white
Marine
guy,
dude.
Rambo dude.
Yes. Okay. Probably some other wrestler.
You know, like they're at some island.
It should just be parenthetical, a different Marine.
Marine as well.
Yeah. Marine harder.
With a vengeance.
Marine guy and his girlfriend or whatever, they're at some island resort and, you know,
separatist
attack and they kidnap her and he's got to get her back.
Yeah. You know he's going to do it.
I don't know why my mom wanted to watch it, but we watched
it. She watched a bunch of, like, military action.
Well, she's ex-military, so it's in her blood, you know. Yeah. It's anyway.
The most amazing thing about that list of 4 movies, by the way, I've never seen any of them.
That is weird.
Well, there you go.
Listed 4 movies that I've never
seen. Now you've got fodder.
Well, I don't think anyone has ever sat down with me and ran off 4 movies and
sequentially, 4
sequentially,
in a row.
Yes, wow. That I had not ever seen.
I wish I had more. Oh, wait, actually I do have another one.
Don't break the streak.
So, Resurrect Dead. A documentary about the northeastern U.S. Toynbee tile art, guerrilla art project.
It's a Toynbee.
Boom! 5 in a row. Just did it, didn't I?
Yes,
on Netflix streaming.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Was
Marine 2.
What's a Toynbee?
So there's these tiles that started appearing, I think, back in the 80s in...
you told me about this.
Need to clarify one thing. Are we talking about like a 60-minute... You know,
more than that, like hour and a half documentary.
So it's a full length.
It's a full length documentary.
All right, it counts 5 in a row.
So there was in the 80s, these tiles started appearing like in the streets, and they always had the same message, and it referenced like a Dr. Toynbee, 2001 Space Odyssey, and this theory about resurrecting the dead on Jupiter. I forget what the actual phrase was, but it was like a four-line phrase, and they would just start appearing all over the city. And I think it started in, it was either New York or Pennsylvania, but it started, but over the next few decades, it would spread all through the Northeast. And this one guy started noticing them, and he started photographing them. And he's like, what's the deal with these tiles? Like, no one knows about it. You know, he eventually started using like a public internet, a computer at the library, because this was pre-internet. So once the internet came along, he started searching, and he eventually found other people that were also interested, and they got together and, you know, pooled their resources to investigate the deal with this. And, you know, they eventually start following leads, and they start trying to talk to people.
Don't spoil it.
And
this sounds cool. I want to see it.
Yeah. So they investigated, and they find stuff out, and it got progressively more and more interesting. Cool. So it was really it started out kind of banal, mm-hmm. like just kind of intriguing, but not really engrossing, but it gets engrossing. So I would say 4 out of 5 for that.
On nice. Netflix and called what again?
Resurrect Dead. Sorry, because that was part of one of the phrases on it. But it's the Toynbee tile
nifty
art project. So yeah, that was actually recommended to me by Jimmy. He saw that and I'm like, oh, all right, I'll put that on there. I watched the first 30 minutes of iSteve, which is Funny or Die's like
Steve Jobs
biopic parody.
With the Mac guy.
With Justin Long playing Steve Jobs.
Really?
And apparently there's
Did he have any ice cream cakes?
He did not.
Apparently, there is a scene later. You'll notice I said I only got through the first 30 minutes where he is actually like yelling at Justin Long in an ad. So it's Justin Long as Steve Jobs yelling at Justin Long in one of those Apple ads.
Did he change his hair?
Little meta moment.
Yeah. I didn't get to that scene because after about 30 minutes, it was not really that great. It's actually gotten fairly mixed to bad reviews. Mm-hmm. It's not as horrible as I thought it would be, but it almost like committed a worse sin than being bad. It was just kind of boring. And yep. So it was supposed to, I thought it was going to be hilarious, but it's just not that funny, which
so
is weird.
So did you mark it Funny or Die?
I didn't do either because I'm a horrible person. And I didn't watch it on Funny or Die. I watched it like embedded on some other site, so I didn't even think about it.
You're a horrible person.
I really am.
Are you saying
that I did not express my opinion.
The concept of the Funny or Die website is that you watch a video and then you give it either thumbs up funny or thumbs down die.
Yeah.
That's where Funny or Die comes
yeah.
from.
Yeah.
I also did not know throat. This.
Funny or die is hot or not for comedy videos.
I didn't know that either.
I really didn't know.
But this was a homegrown video by the Funny or Die people. Right. So yeah.
I always assumed Funny or Die meant.
I just thought it was a funny name.
Yeah.
It is.
It's also that.
Well, you clearly don't have to go and rate videos. Like you can. One of the things, if you actually watch, I do the same thing. Like a lot of Funny or Die stuff gets linked and you just watch it on YouTube or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
And then one non-movie thing. You also haven't seen iSteve, so technically that's almost six.
Does not count.
It's 80 minutes long.
That is not a theatrical release.
Yeah.
Why does it have to be a theatrical release?
Because it does.
There was no popcorn involved.
I'm giving myself a 0.25 for that. So there's a new album out. There's a remix album for the Fez soundtrack.
Uh-huh.
The Fez soundtrack is one of my favorite soundtracks of all. It's just one of my favorite collections of music ever and one of my favorite games. The original composer of the soundtrack plus like 10 other people did remixes for it. It's great. It's awesome. And there is another album coming out in a couple weeks. So this is like the first of two because I think it's supposed to be sandwiching Fez coming out for PC on May 1st. So this was like a week before and then another album a week after that. So anybody who hasn't played Fez, by the way, if you don't normally listen to our podcast and haven't heard us talk effusively about this game, or at least me, you should play Fez. And now if you didn't have an Xbox, it doesn't matter. You can play it on PC. And I even pre-ordered it on PC. That's how much I like it. I want to play it again. And this album is great. You can get it for, I think it's $10 on Bandcamp.
Oh.
But totally worth all 1,000 pennies. all right. That's me for media. Sorry.
Cool. Media stuff. So in terms of the... So I watched Luther. Josh recommended this on the show, and I've had a couple other people recommend it.
Right, the Luther Vandross biopic.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. It's all about the burger he invented with Krispy Kreme donuts. And yeah.
Yes.
I got to see that.
Ew.
Have you heard of that? There was Luther
Vandross. Is that like the one at the San Diego Fair?
Luther Vandross apparently invented that. It's called the Luther. But
oh, you're not shitting me.
No. This is real.
That's real.
It's
a cheeseburger, but instead of a bun, you use two Krispy Kreme donuts.
Or
side.
One that you cut in half.
Or you could cut one in half. But
if you're watching your weight.
Weak.
Yeah.
If you're weak,
if you're not that hungry.
Yeah. But no, this is Luther. This is Idris Elba from The Wire and, you know, numerous other things. And it's excellent. Fuck, it's so good. Really, really good. Super creepy crime drama. Very scary and psychologically disturbing. And, you know, you have to want to watch stuff like that. It's like a darker, less humorous Dexter. It's that kind of a thing, like that kind of a
what is
tough to kind of tough to handle. No, he's not a killer, but it's got those kind of disturbing, but just amazingly well acted and great. The thing that I found interesting is there are and basically, it's a police procedural. The first gun in the entire show doesn't show up till episode 5 because it's set in Britain crime does not involve handguns over there because the penalties are so stiff. That was very weird to me. Like, when a gun showed up, I was shocked. I was like, oh shit, a gun. And it was a weird
thing. Shit just
got
real.
Yeah, it was like they were able to significantly raise the stakes by using a gun after not having had one. And
that's awesome.
Something that is not available to, you know, American dramatists. Right?
I have a smile on my face thinking about that society.
Yeah.
Just now, like that.
They had to invent more interesting ways to kill people.
Well, it's kind of like war.
Said the cynic.
If you think about it, if you look at it as government versus government, country versus country, warfare used to be very brutal. It's face to face.
Yeah.
Everyone involved can see the brutality. Now you push a button. I mean, coming on drone strikes,
right.
You know, now you push a button, you can ignore it. You know, the general public can ignore it.
War is so impersonal.
You don't know 17 people that come back with PTSD, you know. You know, and that's kind of the way it is with guns. You outlaw guns. These criminals in England, I'm sure, are using other weapons, bludgeoning tools or knives.
Right.
You know, it's more personal. It's more face-to-face.
Mm-hmm.
You're less likely to be a violent criminal because it's a lot easier to pull the trigger than to actually get up on somebody.
Right, yeah.
You know, there's probably far less violent crime overall. It's not like there are as many murders. They're just not being able to use a gun would make murder
harder.
Far less likely to occur, period. Yeah.
Luther, very, very good. 5 stars. I finished A Memory of Light, which is the Robert Jordan, Brandon Sanderson. That is the way to finish off a series. Oh, man.
So it's done now?
It is done, and they really did it right. Mass Effect 3 could totally have learned a lesson from this book, although they couldn't because it didn't come out until afterward. But anyway, they did an awesome job, and it made me think about Mass Effect 3. You know, Josh contends that he's not here to defend himself, but that the problem
Suck it,
is
Josh.
That Americans can't handle tragedies, that ME3 was a tragedy and therefore, you know, people just weren't able to deal with it. And that's what they didn't like about it.
Yeah, people can't handle Shakespeare.
That
stuff's
totally brought into focus how wrong that is. Or, you know, it might be right for some people. I think he is right that there were a lot of people who just didn't like that it didn't have a happy ending. That is not what I didn't like about it. And what I really felt let down by the ending of that game was that I didn't feel like it paid off a lot of the decisions I had made and paid off all the different characters that I had met around, you know, through the course of the game. A Memory of Light does a phenomenal job with touching in with and weaving all those story threads back together into one cohesive ending. But it has the same kind of structure where like the whole final book is the last battle, which Mass Effect 3 does as well, right? The whole game is the final fight, right? The war starts at the beginning of the game and the whole game is that. So anyway, that's really good. Series totally does a reverse bell curve. It's like really good and kind of gets pretty weak in the middle and comes back strong. So that's cool.
Nice.
Yeah. So, shall we move on to games? We have a couple games.
I had one more thing I wanted to mention that you made me think because you mentioned a book. I actually read a book over our vacation.
Good for you, sir.
I know. Now, yes. For me, that's an accomplishment. It was not a novel, though. It was, I guess, a nonfiction book.
Were there pictures?
There were diagrams. Does that count? So I read. I got this book for like Christmas or birthday some time ago. I don't remember. It's called "What Are You Laughing At?" And it's a technical breakdown of what makes a joke funny by this guy named Dan O'Shannon, who's a writer producer, who was a writer producer on Cheers, Frasier, and now on Modern Family. So he knows a little something about writing comedy. And over the course of like 250 pages, he literally breaks down the science of why a joke is funny or how a joke is funny using diagrams, using like, you know, basically trying to create like the you know, unified
taxonomy,
unified grand theory of comedy. Mm-hmm. And which sounds, you know, like it's too subjective, like you couldn't do that, but it was awfully persuasive and actually almost a little too complicated at times for me to even like parse what he was trying to say. Like it got too technical, which I've never really had an issue with comedy being too technical, so that was cool. But it was a really interesting book. You know, he had some really interesting things to say that made a lot of sense about why, you know, a kind of joke works and like, you know, a joke is just one part of the delivery and like, you know, who you are and your preconceived notions and what your mood was that day and, you know, where you're being told and who you're being told by and the reaction of other people, if there are other people in the room, whether you can actually interact with the person giving the joke, like you're at a live show or you're watching it on TV. All of these things have many different facets. They're all part of the 10 seconds it might take to tell a joke, which I don't know, is kind of fascinating. I've never really read that deeply.
That's
into
cool.
Something.
Yeah, so. Never considered it.
That's very good super book. Interesting.
I would recommend it.
Yeah.
Eric Idle has a book called The Road to Mars. Eric Idle of Monty Python fame, yeah. Right? Wrote a book called The Road to Mars, which is a novel, but it is also kind of his treatise on comedy and his. It's about a robot who's trying to figure out what makes things funny.
Oh, nice.
So it's basically an excuse for Eric Idle to write that same kind of, you know, do that same kind of thinking. And yeah. It was also very interesting.
Are
that
you comfortable
really cool.
Over there, Robin?
Mm-hmm.
Robin is zoning.
Robin is asleep.
And yet speaking. All right. So games?
Yeah, games. I played... I think you're going to mention both of the iPhone games that you're going to mention, so I'll talk about those when you talk about them.
Maybe.
So the only Badland and Ridiculous Fishing.
I was going to talk about one of those, yes.
Okay, well, I'll talk about Ridiculous Fishing.
Okay.
Which is just to say that I tried it, and it's good. If you played the Flash game, you basically played it. It's
agreed.
It's got higher production values on iOS. It's probably... I still want to play more. It's fun. I think it's worth the $3 I paid or something.
What exactly is Ridiculous Fishing?
Thank you.
It's a guy in a boat who drops a fishing line down, and you tilt the phone to avoid fish on the way down and to attempt to get as far down as you can. And then once your line touches a fish, the lure, like once a fish bites on your lure, or you get to the bottom of your line, you go back up, and you try to steer the lure into fish, catch as many of them as possible, and when they get to the level of the water, they fly into the air, and then you blast them with various guns to capture them.
Ridiculous.
Like it's ridiculous. And it has, you know, it has like a whole weird group of, it's got like a fish encyclopedia with all these random, you know, kind of joke punny fish names, and it's a weird, fun little mechanic. So it's good. More interesting, I think, about that game is there's a really, really good, probably, I don't know, like 6,000 word essay, really, on Polygon about the games, about it and the process of developing it and when it came out and how it was a victim of game cloning, which is a process where game mechanics are not patentable or, you know, protectable with internet intellectual property rights. So... companies can basically, you know, Zynga is maybe most famous for doing this, can just essentially take the whole concept of a game and recreate it. And that happened to these two guys. And it's kind of about how they overcame that process. So that's also very interesting and a good read. So the other game, you're going to talk about Badland. I'm playing Bioshock Infinite. I'll talk about it more when I finish it. I'm kind of two minds on it.
So is the internet.
The
internet is like mixed as hell on this game. It's crazy.
It's a snooze. The gameplay is a snooze.
Is it different?
Most
from the
of
other
the gameplay.
Bioshocks? Just the gameplay itself.
No, no, it's exactly the same, and it's so well done. It's so great, and the world building is amazing.
Agreed.
Like they are so good at world building, and I am just so not into playing games that are only first person shooters at this point. Like, I'm just like slogging through it just because I want to experience it, but I find a lot of it pretty boring.
I do have one question though. That's, you know, not a spoiler or anything, but the mechanic where you can hook on to the sky rails, I think is brilliant. I think, like, I'm with you that the gameplay is kind of samey. You know, you feel like you've played this game 100 times already, and the sky hooking thing is not like revolutionary, but I feel like
it's fun.
It's a really well done thing. And just to explain this, like most of the fighting tends to happen in like a closed off area. Like you'll get to a certain arena that's not supposed to be arena, but is, you know, for all intents and purposes, arena. And there'll be a bunch of enemies and you got to fight them. And sometimes in that area, you know, besides the normal cover hiding behind walls and stuff, there's this like railing that will snake around the area.
Like a roller coaster track.
Yeah. And you can shoot your little like melee weapon and hook onto it and like follow it around. Like you were doing, what's that thing where you hook onto the pulley and go across an expanse?
Zipline.
Yeah. It's sort of like a zipline. Yeah. And you can shoot from there and you can also, you know, change directions or you can jump down and like hit a guy from there and get like a one hit kill kind of a thing. I think that's really fun. I loved doing that, and I wished every single fighting area had that mechanic in it, and it was only a few places, but it is disorienting, but it's still playable. So I don't know. I thought that was cool, but yeah, it doesn't necessarily save the whole game or something like that.
Yeah, no, it's cool. It's a cool, you know, novel, you know, thing to have as part of the combat.
The
and,
shooty parts.
Yeah. They do so much thinking about their games and about the worlds and about their...
Ken Levine, man.
It's a studio that's really, really trying to say something with their games, and I love that. And I'm really finding it distracting because there are a number of moments where you are just inhabiting the world and you're not engaging in combat. And the fact... I find it super distracting that you have a huge like gun sitting out in front of your field of view. There's no way to not have to put it away, right? There's no just like holster your weapon.
Which is probably a statement that I feel they're making. Maybe. I don't think that's unintentional.
It's not in Britain.
It's weird.
Right.
Anyway.
It's banned in Britain. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, those are the games I played.
Did you guys want to talk about any games?
Yes, actually. Within the last 2 weeks, I've become semi-addicted to The Simpsons Tapped Out.
Didn't you play a ton of that?
Oh,
no.
God, man, no.
Don't do it.
Oh, I got addicted to that shit, too.
That shit's
dangerous.
Still,
oh, no, I gave that up. Kick that cold turkey.
That lasted,
that's the only
that
way.
That lasted, like, what, 2 weeks?
It was that. I played that and The Sims free-to-play at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
Like, because I would do all my moves on one, and I'd be like, I got to wait 5 hours to do another move. Let's play The Simpsons. Play all those moves, and then wait.
Yeah.
It's really well written, though. I have to admit, the writing, because I think it's actually written by real Simpsons writers, and the voices are all the right voices.
Right.
The production values are insanely good, but it's still a free-to-play addiction fest.
You see, I'm probably missing out then, because I play it with the volume off.
Oh, what?
They have dialogue boxes as well, so
no,
I'm not
you
hearing
gotta
the
hear
voice
them
act.
Say it, man. It's
I would
like
love
watching
to hear
an
them
episode.
Say it, but then my boss would be able to tell that I'm playing. As it is, I got it open to hear. I'm like typing on the keyboard with one hand and tapping random houses with the left. You know, I'm trying to hide it.
Nice.
And now we have that on tape.
Oh, well, that's
no,
all
I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I had to try to explain who Cave Johnson was.
Nice.
And then the concept of Portal to my boss today.
Really?
Yes.
How did that go?
He didn't really seem to get it.
Yeah.
Does he not play
you kind
a lot
have
of video
to experience.
Games?
No, he doesn't play any.
You got to experience Cave Johnson.
Yeah.
You have to go through
there's,
his whole...
There's apparently some park in Mission Hills called Pioneer Park.
Yes. I go there all the time. That's the park where we had Charlie's birthday party.
Well, apparently there's like a bunch of graves there, and they made a park over it. Like they're
like Indian.
No, it used to be the
pioneers.
The whole park used to be a cemetery, and they moved all the gravestones over to one corner of it.
Anyway, but the people are still
across
under
across.
It.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm glad I know that now and not.
Yeah,
then.
Me too. Anyway, apparently one of the gravestones that they moved over into the corner says Cave Johnson and then some other last name. Like, wow. Johnson was the middle name.
That's okay. Random.
And so one of my coworkers had a picture of it, and we were laughing at it. My boss was like, I don't get it. And then I was like, so there's a blue portal, and there's an orange portal, and if you walk through one, you come out the other. And he's like, what?
Is that really that hard to understand?
Well, I mean like, how do you make a game out of that?
Well, but
like,
it's not even
a video
game
concept.
No,
I mean, he understood that concept, but just like, how is that two video games worth of
two stuff? Amazing video
yeah,
games.
Two yeah. of the best games ever.
Anyway.
Okay.
Ben, the one who was showing me the picture from the park, he was like, I really wanted to go back and put some lemons on the grave.
In-joke reference.
All right. Is it my turn?
Yeah, what's up?
So, all right. I'm going to do tested, playing, beaten, and haven't tried yet.
Whoa.
So tested, I tried that Perspective game, which is one of those student DigiPen projects. That's the one where you have a little dude on the screen, and you can, like, rotate the world around so that your perspective changes, and it makes, like, certain jumps that would not be makeable without changing your perspective.
You mean like Fez?
Kind of like Fez, okay. Except...
in that it rotates.
Yeah, it rotates, and you have a little...
Changes your perspective.
Yeah, so you know, you'll have, like, a thing where, you know, you... In this particular perspective, your guy can't move there because, like, there's the edge of a wall.
Right.
And if you just move the perspective, that wall moves out of the way, and this other part of the wall moves in, and now you can move it across. So the whole level is just you moving the world around.
Okay.
You know, it feels like a student art project. It's not highly polished, but the concept is cool. I played through almost the whole game, but just, it's kind of samey. Like, it's just, that it's sort of like a Narbacular drop, which was pre-Portal. They need to take that perspective, give it to a real studio, and polish it up, and that'll be, like, the next, like, crazy awesome puzzle game. Mm. I played an RPG, Arena Battler, made in Microsoft Excel, called Arena.xslm. Yeah.
XS.
Some, like, accountant over the course of, like, 5 years.
XLSM. Excel macro.
He said it backwards, though.
So what did I say? XLSM?
Yeah.
Okay. XSLM.
No.
Right.
XLSM.
Okay, so I wrote it down wrong then.
It's an XLSM file.
Okay.
Right?
Right. It is a Microsoft Excel file that has macros. So this guy built a whole arena, like, old school kind of, you know, rogue, like, ASCII graphic game in Excel where you basically have a little dude who's, like, an @ and you're fighting enemies that look like pluses.
So
and
funny.
You have stats and you have different attacks. You have whole skill trees that you build up and you get experience and the battleground changes and the enemies get harder. You know, like 20 years ago, this would have been off the chain. Now it's just kind of like, okay, that's interesting that you made that. But
it's pretty awesome that it's in Excel.
It is in Microsoft Excel, so you can...
You could work on that all day, Justin.
What a coding framework.
Yeah.
I suppose I could.
Anyway, I tried The Cave on the 360.
The demo?
The demo. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Looks really good. It's got an interesting mechanic where you choose 3 out of 7 characters and you have to work together to solve puzzles and stuff. It has promise. Double Fine. You know, they might make something of
You're
themselves
gonna
one
get
of these
it?
Days. I don't know. I wasn't sold on the demo, which is why it is a tested and not playing.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not writing it off. I don't think I played enough of it to really say. But, and then I also tried this game called Skulls of the Shogun, which was really cool. Kind of a strategy game set in like feudal Japan, except your dudes are all dead. So you're kind of fighting in the afterlife, trying to like fight for your
right to party.
Probably, yeah.
That was one of those moments, kind of like your bike incident, where it was in my head, I should say, right to party.
Yeah. Interesting little strategy game. Kind of cool. Okay, actually playing. Evoland. Did I already talk about this?
Mm-hmm,
I did talk about this.
Yep.
I'm still playing Evoland. A couple iPhone games, Blendoku. This is an interesting puzzle game that is, if you really like looking at paint samples and thinking about how color blends into other colors, someone made a whole game based on that.
Huh.
This is my nightmare.
I'm thinking it's a lot of people's nightmares. Yes.
So, I think my coworker linked me something about that, and I tried to do it online, and I was way too impatient.
So, yeah, basically you'll have, like, a little color swatch here, and then you'll have, like, several blank color swatches, and then another color swatch here, and then several to choose from, and you have to put them in the right order from one shade, gradient, like light shade to dark shade.
Wow.
The colorblind guy says, this is right. Not sound fun.
Yeah. Justin, you would not be able to play this.
I
don't know. For people who are not colorblind, it's kind of fascinating. It's weird how interesting it is and how good I am at it. I don't know why. I was able to breeze through like the first 50 levels without really trying too hard. I don't know. A really cool game on the iPad, Wonder Putt, is a whole 19-hole miniature golf course on one screen. And the art style is amazing. It's really stylized, but it's really well done. And there's tons of animation. Like, you'll finish a hole, and a whole animation, a cutesy little animation will happen that will, like, create hole two. And you'll make that hole, and then it will, like, shoot your ball into the air and, like, land on another part of the screen, and that will be hole three. Or you'll go through a tunnel, and that will come out into hole four. And it's all nicely, you know, graphical. And
but it's the whole thing is on one screen. The screen never moves. It's just, like,
yeah,
it keeps getting drawn out on the screen.
The whole thing?
That's fun.
The whole 19 course.
At the end of the whole, at the end of the round of golf, you have all 19 holes visible from an overhead shot?
Some holes kind of overwrite other holes.
Okay.
So you don't see all 19, but you'd never change the screen.
The view never moves. Cool.
Yeah. So high production value is really nice done. Okay, so the game you actually wanted to talk about, Badland. This game was amazing. Oh my god. Where did this game come from? John actually told me about it. So it's sort of like a quasi Infinite Runner. The prototypical Infinite Runner that's really popular right now is like Jetpack Joyride or Temple Run. Those are huge and sell like millions of copies. This game is like 90 gajillion times better than either of those games. First of all, graphical style, amazing. Like, just...
Yeah, it's kind of like Limbo meets Outland, basically.
Yes. So you're playing like this little like cutesy alien guy who can...
flap.
Who basically flaps and flies to the right through obstacles, but you can get power-ups that change his size, change his speed, change whether he sticks to walls or not. And every level kind of like introduces new mechanics. Like it like never gets boring because it's always like kind of like just a little bit new every level. And some levels are really short and just fast, so it's almost like a pinball where you're just trying to like get to the end really quick. It's $3.99, so it's actually more expensive, I think, than maybe the average app, but it's totally worth it. And it was done by two guys, like a programmer and an animator, and looks like a AAA game. And
it does not look like a AAA game. It looks like an iPhone. It looks like an Xbox Live Arcade game.
Yeah. Okay. It's high production values. It doesn't look like an indie game, even though it is an indie game. I don't know. I really like it. Have you tried it?
I have. I played 10 levels or something. I think it's pretty good. I'm going to play more. I was not like immediately in love. You know, I thought it was like, it's good. It's good.
Okay.
I'm not like super over the moon. You know, I think it's, the art is good. It's a lot like Rayman Jungle Run. I don't know if you've played that at all, but it's basically the same thing. It's, you know, your guy only goes one way and it's, you know, one button controls and maneuver him through the path as you're going.
Yeah.
So I think what it has going most for it is that art style and the kind of, you know, evocative theming.
That's good, but I don't know. I really am in love with the gameplay. Mm-hmm. I like that it's sort of like an Infinite Runner, but the screen...
I don't put it in that category at all.
But the thing is that the screen will keep moving if you get stuck and will kill you. So there's no way for you to completely stop.
It's not like... I mean, it's
forced scrolling.
It's levels. It's levels with forced scrolling.
Right.
So it's like Mario.
Right. Well, right. It's not exactly Infinite Runner, but I'm just saying the fact that you can't stop like Mario makes it more like an Infinite Runner. So, so anyway, I really like that.
Yeah.
And then
it's good. It's worth $4.
Yeah, totally. And then I still have Tomb Raider sitting. I haven't touched it yet, but
nice.
I'm waiting for that 3 hours of focused, I'm going to really pay attention to this because it deserves it, because it's a $60 game. But whereas I played Badland mainly on the plane.
Yeah.
Nice. Cool. Are we going to do this? Are we going to do this movie trailer thing?
We have a new feature that we're going to try.
We're going to try a game.
Let's try a game. Would you like to play a game, Justin?
I would, yes.
Would you also like to do that, Chaz and Robin?
Yes. Let us do this. So, Justin has seen a movie. Justin, who sees every movie.
Except for the five.
Except for the five that Mike listed.
I still can't believe I did that. But.
Although I did probably watch a couple minutes of Marine 2 on Spike or something.
It was bad. Yeah.
Those were minutes wasted.
We are now going to watch this movie. We're going to watch the trailer for this movie that Justin has seen.
Segment is called Picture in Picture.
Picture in Picture. I like this as a segment title. I didn't know that was a segment title, segment but I like title. It.
It is now.
Picture. Well, Mike and I discussed that. Basically, what you're watching is the trailer. Yeah. And then some movies give away everything in the trailer to the trained eye. I've seen so many movies at this point that I can watch a trailer and even it just flashes in the trailer, know, oh, well, that happens in the last 10 minutes of the movie. Thanks for giving it away, you know, or something along those lines. I can get the whole movie with the exception of one or two never would see that coming twists from watching a trailer. Now, this isn't universal, but I want to say probably a good 40% of the time I will avoid trailers of movies I'm excited for. Sometimes, so I don't get too much from it. So that being said, having seen the movie, you guys are now going to watch the trailer and then take turns saying what you think happens in this movie.
Yeah.
Based on what you saw. So how do these turns?
I think we just spitball it.
Or spitball. Or
spitballing.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, this is a, you know, it's a fluid event.
Yeah, this is a seat of the pants shit here.
Yeah.
This is the beta version.
So the three of you or all viewers here together can spitball how they think the movie, you know, beginning, middle, end, what are the three acts of the movie.
So we're going to spitball what we think, and then you're going to tell us how right or wrong we are?
Correct.
Okay.
Nice.
And the name of the movie is?
Olympus Has Fallen, starring the inequitable Gerard Butler.
As far as I know, it's about Greeks.
Yeah.
And falling.
I literally have never heard of this until now.
It made $38 million in its opening weekend.
And
it was a huge success. A month ago.
Okay.
And we're going to pipe in the audio here, so you'll get to hear what we're hearing, sort of.
We're watching the trailer now.
We'll see how badly this sounds.
Are we ready?
Commence trailer.
Let's do this.
The sound is off.
The sound is off. Technical difficulties, please stand by.
This trailer is muted. Yes.
Pause.
Someone say something about it being a live show.
Start over. Start, okay.
That's podcast.
We are professionals. All right, let's start this again.
Play. Green following preview approved for audiences.
Not Greece.
5 minutes, sir. Evening, ma'am.
Merry Christmas, Mike.
Mustang, this is Big Top. Bring it out to full package.
Where'd that come from?
Everybody knows you did the right thing on that bridge. Even the president knows. You gotta learn how to get back into the real world.
Mr. President, we're ready for you.
Our guests have arrived. I'd like to welcome you to the White House, sir.
Sir, there's been an intrusion. Let's go, move!
President.
I want to speak for the Russians, the Chinese, the British, and the French. In that order.
If you attempt to retake this building, I will execute
your commander-in-chief.
Oh, my God.
We have contact from inside the White House.
Identify yourself.
309.
Jesus, Banning?
The same guy that was removed from the president's detail?
He is ex-special forces.
40 commandos breached the gate, 28 are left.
Can we trust him?
With all due respect, I'm the best hope you've got.
We're talking about the safety of the President of the United States.
We're talking about a hell of a lot more than that, sir.
Just open the gates of hell.
The United States of America doesn't negotiate with terrorists.
Who said anything about negotiating?
There you go.
There you
have it. That was a movie.
For Olympus Has Fallen.
I am not going to see that.
So the first thing that comes to mind,
we should describe what you saw.
So
I saw Die Hard in the White House.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. God damn you.
I haven't seen
My
Die
brain
Hard.
Was saying, say Die Hard in D.C., and it didn't do it.
The president gets captured by terrorists in the White House.
And they have to send McClane. I mean,
Gerard Butler.
It's this
no,
movie
the
meets
speaker
this movie.
Guy?
What's that?
Who's the actor that plays the speaker?
The speaker?
Morgan Freeman.
Yeah.
Morgan
basically Freeman plays President or God again. Yes.
So Morgan Freeman is in the Carl Winslow role for this movie from Die Hard. Family Matters.
Sort of. There's an entire room of Carl Winslow's.
Oh, okay.
And
yeah, but
random security dude has to save the president at the end.
Gerard Butler, McClane's the situation.
Right.
You keep saying names.
That's the Bruce guy. Willis's character from Die Hard.
Okay.
So if in watching this,
how is this
I was
related?
Like,
that the butt.
You can't
how
just
is,
say this.
How is a man's woman's? Woman. I don't know.
I think actually, woman.
Alana. Okay. Anyway. Yeah. I'm turning this off. It's distracting.
Mike is looking at the related videos left over on YouTube. This strikes me as Die Hard meets Air Force One.
Similar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is this to do the it's this meets this thing. Yeah. Okay. So Gerard Butler had a traumatic event where the president's wife was killed in an accident and he blames himself.
Car accident.
Yeah. President's wife killed in a car accident. He
goes off a bridge.
Unable to save
Who's
her.
Who's to say that wasn't the terrorists?
The deer was hired by the terrorists.
Shit dog.
It could have been a robotic deer.
Remote controlled.
Brainwashed.
That sounds like a podcast intro clip.
He clearly, he blames himself.
Angling for that now, are you? Huh?
Cannot,
can't get over
yeah,
it.
I picture him the way Kurt Russell at the beginning of Stargate. Do you remember that?
Yeah, nice pull.
Yeah, there you
I
go.
I like that.
Yeah,
you know,
just
gun in the mouth or from the
room. Yeah. In his kid's room, like yeah. Can't forgive himself.
That's
can't
a
bring
great
himself
movie.
To
You've
come
seen
back
that,
to work.
Right?
Stargate?
Yeah.
It's been a while.
You haven't seen Stargate?
Nope.
Oh man.
You could totally handle that.
That's a good.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Good
no, that's,
sci-fi.
It's kind of fluffy.
Good legit sci-fi movie. Yeah.
James Spader's in it.
For some reason. So we have to come up with the reason why he's in the White House. Like,
he's the president.
No. Why?
Kidding.
Gerard Butler's
why
character.
Gerard Butlered? Butlered. Why
that
he Gerard
Secret
Butlered?
Service dude?
This movie got butlered. Yeah.
He's a Secret Service guy, but do
why
we think
he was in the White House? Right
he's
then?
Like forcing himself to go back to work, or was he there on accident? Like, or was he? Maybe he was there to tender his resignation. Like, I just can't do this anymore.
I thought he was trying to go back to work because they said, like, you got to get over this, man.
Yeah, I assumed that the time between the president's wife dying and when this happens is, like, years or something. Like, time has passed and he's maybe not even
some
working
time
anymore.
Has passed, yeah.
Spitballing is a better idea. I like this. All right, go ahead.
Yeah. He is not working there. And, why is he there? If he's no longer working there, why is he at the White House when this happens? Or do they just call him in?
You can actually
tell us like
now.
Out of retirement.
Oh yeah, no, maybe they call him in to let him go. Maybe they call him in to tell him he's fired. But for some reason, like there's got to be
I
some
assume that he
ironic
quit
reason.
After the wife died.
So what do you think? Did he quit or was he fired?
I think he quit.
I think neither.
You think he was still working for them?
I think he was.
It?
He was just not maybe on
he,
the president's
like,
detail.
He took a
maybe
leave of absence,
was,
but
yeah,
is
I
trying
think
to
he was still
get
working.
Over it.
Leave of absence.
Robin's the winner.
Nice. Woo! All right. Leave of
Secret
absence.
Secret Service protects the president, protects other
Forever.
Important government
yeah,
bodies.
Yeah, he could have been on
However,
the vice presidential detail.
The Secret Service is actually under the Treasury, and
really?
The Treasury does all sorts of things. You know, I mean, there's tons of activities that a Secret Service agent can do that has nothing to do with protecting people. So he was reassigned off the president's detail.
Yeah. I figured he just had some other job answering phones or something.
Yeah, basically a desk job.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
In a building close to the White House.
The one weird thing is...
Oh, so he wasn't in the White House at the time.
You see him go to the window, and he sees what's going on at the White House. By the way, the president is held hostage within the White House itself.
Yeah.
Oh, I assume there is he was like in some secret room or something.
In the White House.
In the White House.
Yeah, there's an attack on the White House. Gerard Butler, our protagonist, is working in a different building, but it's all within. If you've ever been to D.C., those buildings are. So he can look out his office window and see the White House and see what's going on.
So he rushes over.
Slightly related side note, I recently saw some pictures of the White House when they renovated it in the 50s.
Yeah, yeah.
And they basically gutted the entire thing, so it was just a shell. And they took everything out of the inside. It was fascinating.
Yeah, by that time, it was like a total shithole.
Yeah.
It was like a rat's nest. Walls were falling down.
Plumbing. God damn you, FDR.
Crazy story, yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
Okay. Yeah, so Gerard Butler makes his way back, right? Or he makes his way over and gets in because of his knowledge, having been a Secret Service.
He has security clearances, presumably. Yeah. Although that wouldn't matter if it was on fire.
Gets in, but manages to get in immediately before they cordon off the whole area, so he's like the one good guy on the inside,
and knows where all the guns and shit are stashed, so he can arm himself because he looked pretty armed.
It's true. It's a
good. Well, he's got a whole team too.
He probably accumulates weapons over time.
Maybe there's a gun safe in the White House.
That's true. Yeah, you never start like a video game.
Or he has no weapons to begin with, and then he
picks up.
Murders.
He opens up specific doors once he has the access.
Well, he did
cards.
Say it started with 40 dudes, and they were down to 20, so he could have 20 guns by then.
That's true. Oh, so here's an interesting question. What is the motive behind random Chinese terrorists?
Who are the terrorists?
Are they Chinese?
Okay, well, Asian
North
descent.
Korean.
Asian-esque terrorist.
North Korea.
Who do you think it is? North Korea?
I'm going with North Korea, yeah.
I was thinking China.
Mongolia.
That's China.
Yeah, that is China.
Damn.
Vietnamese.
No, I need something more obtuse.
Laotian. They're Laotian terrorists.
Azerbaijan.
Azerbaijan.
Nice.
All right, so what are they?
They're Korean, but they're neither north nor south.
They're separatist.
Yes.
Central Korea.
In the movie, the assumption.
Central Korea.
DMZ.
They're border Korea.
They're actually meeting with North Koreans. Uh-huh. And the assumption is, so the North Koreans are actually guests of the president in the White House. Uh-huh. That's how they gain entry into the White House, as the guests. The assumption of all those on the outside and those who were captured is that it's North Korea basically pulling a Pearl Harbor, saying, oh, yeah, let's talk, let's do peace. We'll get back to you next Tuesday. On Sunday, they bomb you. But that's not the case. It's actually a private terrorist group who are Korean, who are not for North or South. They're against America's involvement. They're against America's involvement in Korean affairs.
Okay.
That the North and South, it's their this group, it's their ideal.
So what do they hope to gain by holding the president hostage?
Yeah.
Allowing North and South to just fight it out, let the best country win, and everyone else stay the F out of our business. U.S., you involve yourself in too many foreign affairs. You should worry about your own land. Obviously, you are at risk here at home as well.
Uh-huh.
There's your motive.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's not the full and complete motive, but I want to see where else you guys go with it. He's in the house, and
he's in the White House.
Yeah. So he kicks his ass. He kicks asses through the White House.
Right. Yeah. He kills a bunch of dudes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Has to get closer and closer to liberating the president.
Right. But he's getting help communication with
the Speaker of the House,
Morgan
is
Freeman,
like talking
who's
to
at
him.
The Pentagon, who's probably helping with surveillance or information.
Clearly,
or
they looked at him on the surveillance cameras.
Yeah, yeah. The president and vice president are incapacitated, so he is the Speaker of the House, is third in line.
Right, right.
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't even see the vice president.
No one does.
He's on a mission in Ghana.
Right, yeah.
Actually, I don't know.
He was on the train.
I don't know. Who pays attention?
Yeah, they.
I almost feel like there's nothing to say because I feel like the trailer was the movie.
And that's why I chose this
trailer. It was a horrible trailer.
I chose an easy one for you because the trailer does show the mirror. I don't even know what we need to say.
He saves the president, obviously. It's not going to be an unhappy ending
where he gets repelled down Mission Impossible style and just enough it.
There's got to be a climactic fight scene. There's got to be a Gerard Butler versus, you know, Korean terrorist guy fight scene.
Yeah, the dude who says we're here to negotiate, like that's the main bad guy.
The big bad.
And they have a face off and they say witty things and he's like, this is
get off my plane.
Yeah, get out of my White House.
So where are they holding the president? Oh. Where do you imagine that would be?
Well, it's not his office because we saw that in the camera.
The secret bunker, secret war room.
Yeah, there's like a clearly a secret underground.
The war room bunker.
Oh, there's got to be like an Oval Office fight scene at some point.
There is, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And by the way, the Oval Office, that's where the gun safe is, Robin.
Ha! Nice. I am apparently a genius.
Did you take a tour of the White House?
No. Oh, okay. They were sold out of tickets the day we went.
And he didn't need to use his Secret Service knowledge to get inside the White House. The front door had been exploded open.
Oh, okay. I told you, when it's on fire, you
multiple
don't need
clearance. Holes, multiple gaping holes in this building. Yes,
when the building is on fire, clearances don't matter.
Yeah. All right, so going back to the room, which room is he in?
Oh,
let's
the president?
See. Let's go down what rooms we know exist in the White House.
There's Lincoln bedroom. He's in a bedroom. No. Why would he be in a bedroom?
You were on the right track when you said like a warm room.
It's a hidden underground bunker.
Yeah, it's a hidden war room bunker. You know, where they go to plan wars and stuff.
Sir, the White House is being attacked. We're going to get you down the elevator and hide in the safe underground bunker.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so what would be the impetus?
Somehow they already got there, like the bad guys.
So what's the motive? The guy we don't negotiate, who said we're here to negotiate.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
He is the head of security to the North Korean premier who's there visiting.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow he cleared both North Korean and American clearance.
Yeah.
So they took, not only did they take the president into secret bunker.
He's a double agent with this, you know, non-nationalist Korean group.
So not only did they take the president into secret bunker, they took all of his guests into secret bunker.
That seems
like a bad idea.
Although, imagine if they left the North Korean premier out in the open and he got killed in the White House. Think about the international incident.
Mm. Yes.
So they were trying to prevent. At the time, they had no idea who was attacking
them. They should learn from this movie. You need to have multiple secret bunkers.
Yes.
I don't think Americans would care. They would only care if they killed Psy.
The North Koreans would care.
Right.
No, only if Psy got killed.
If the president were visiting China, your favorite pick for terrorist activity, apparently.
My favorite pick?
That's who you went with.
My favorite terrorist nation.
Yes. If the president were visiting China and somehow in a military incursion occurred, even if it's not Chinese military.
Like a junta, perhaps?
Whatever you
That's
want.
My favorite military incursion word.
The junta?
I love a junta. Mm. I'm not even exactly sure what that means, technically. But
we're going to say Genghis Khan.
I'm
the Mongols
all for protecting their guests, but they should have put the president in a separate bunker.
Right.
Yeah, they've got to have two bunkers.
If Obama were visiting China and were killed in China, do you think that the average U.S. citizen would have issues with China for a little while, at least?
Yeah.
No, I understand.
Yeah.
So they had to keep him alive. They thought it was in the nation's best interest to protect everyone of any sort of
they've let a terrorist guy into the super secret bunker where he can presumably now, you know, whatever, launch
do
missiles
whatever.
Or do dangerous other war type activities or blackmail them into allowing him to launch missiles or, you know, threaten to chop off presidential fingers until the president
launches
missiles.
What was with
all
the planes like knocking over the Washington Monument though?
It was all the same plane.
That was the like initial
attack.
Oh, that
attack. Was just like
yeah,
one
shot. They just
shot
showed the same attack sequence five different times.
So the things that Charles was saying, I feel like that's him guessing for all of us what their actual plan was. Like, okay, they've got the president.
Mm-hmm.
Now what is the plan? What is the payoff? Like, are they They're probably not looking for money.
Military pulls out of Korea, I guess.
Is that it? Because you said his problem was that we were meddling in too many affairs. So
that was the surface motive that they first fed to the war room in the Pentagon.
Yeah, but how do you get us to promise to never meddle in affairs again?
Yeah, but
there's no way to prove that.
What's the deep motive?
Yeah. But their actual reason was...
This is what we're guessing. What's your guess?
They want to cause nuclear war or their crazy death cult.
Yeah, but then everybody dies.
Yeah, and maybe they want to kill everybody. I don't know. What do we think? I mean, their other options
would be,
they want to
kill everybody.
They want to force the U.S.
You're correct that they wanted access to the secret bunker so that they can control U.S. missiles.
Yeah, so they have some
reason
for doing
that. They wanted
to
get rid of a different country that they hated more.
Final answer.
Well, I guess it's possible they wanted to blow up America because, and they're willing to die for that.
They wanted to blow up the moon.
All right, I'm gonna go with Chaz in that they wanted to blow up America and they're gonna die as martyrs.
I don't think so.
Robin, you've been so right all night long.
No.
They wanted to blow up the moon?
Until now. You guys are right. Okay. Yes, they want control of US missiles, nuclear missiles, so they can shoot them up and land in America.
Mm. Okay.
Taking out who they feel is the, you know, instigator global enemy of war. Yeah, the global enemy.
And so they're saying...
So, I was going to go with like Russia or something.
Yeah. So how are they going to... So the next thing is, how are they actually going to make this happen? Like, you know, we have your president. You must let us blow up America or else we kill the president? That doesn't make any sense.
At we're going to kill the president or kill the president.
No, but if they have the controls inside the bunker to launch missiles, then they could like torture the president long enough to make him do it, or they could...
So they need the president or someone,
or they have his authorization
to launch because he knows the codes. Like, they can't do it themselves.
Right. You don't just go into the room and
hit
button.
Yeah.
So but, they're pressuring the president to put the codes in the whole time. Like, dude, launch the fucking missiles for us. Like, that's why we're here.
Mm.
Is that what we think?
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, they could threaten to torture him or someone else, or maybe they have leverage on the outside. Like, they've got his daughter.
I don't know. I feel like there's a puzzle.
I was waiting for you guys. All right. Now, think back to
who's
the opening
got whose
sequence.
Daughter?
Think back to the opening sequence with the car going over the cliff.
Right. Uh-huh. The whole
the
family.
Wife dies. Mm-hmm. Who else was in the car?
I don't know. There were a couple of people.
Were there kids in the car?
Yeah, was
I
there a kid
it.
That died?
Oh, there was another trailer where they show that. Okay, yeah. In this particular trailer, they don't show
it.
It
looks like the president and his wife.
Right, in the car trailing them, the son.
They have a son.
Oh, in a different car.
Okay.
So the first half of the movie is them trying to locate the president's son, who, by the way, also knows all the Secret Service entrances and whatnot within the White House. And it almost is like the first half is almost like a Home Alone thing, where the kid is hiding... And Gerard Butler, our protagonist, he has a special relationship with this kid, but he was guarding him for so many years.
Uh-huh.
So when he finds
out... It's kind of an important plot that we didn't
see in the trailer.
Right. I was hoping that, and that's why picture in picture. What can you pull?
Right.
And
just
you
based
know,
on tropes.
Right. So Charles is thinking, okay, how are they going to force the president to give up nuclear launch codes? How can they pressure him to do this? Threaten his family, threaten his daughter, threaten
we
his
son. We have your children.
Yeah.
So the bad guys are searching for the son. The Pentagon tells Gerard Butler, no one knows where the son is yet. Gerard Butler's like, well, I saw the bodies on the ground. The son wasn't one of them. I'm going to go search for the kid. First half of the movie is Gerard Butler searching the White House, taking people out while searching for the kid. And then getting the kid to safety so that the Korean militant group no longer has that leverage against the president. Hmm. So once that leverage is taken away, they're looking for other forms of leverage.
Nice.
And that's where the torture comes in.
Okay. Mm.
But our president's a tough guy. He's a former amateur boxer.
Okay.
Yes, he's a tough guy. So torturing him won't do anything. So they have to torture everyone else instead.
This movie gets 5 tropes out of 5. This trailer does anyway.
I think we did. It was an easy. I mean, we didn't get maybe the finer details, but we got the general gist.
No, you absolutely did.
I mean, what else was it going to do, you know?
Right. And that's why I chose this one for the first time around, because it is your not entirely generic, but mostly generic action movie. Yeah. Where,
are there any other crazy twists that we missed?
Yes. There was another guy on the president's Secret Service when the wife died.
Mm-hmm.
He also retired after that event.
Mm-hmm.
He became a private security. And he was a Benedict Arnold. He was helping the Korean group.
Oh.
Nice.
So,
see, I told you it was a robot.
But why? Why was he helping them? Like, what
money.
Was
money.
Money.
They were just paying him to do
They're
it.
Just paying him.
30 pieces of silver.
Yes.
30 pieces of 8.
Yes. So he's now a private guy.
8 pieces
who's guarding,
of silver.
I think he was hired to be additional U.S. protection for the Korean, maybe?
And then does Gerard
whatever.
Butler...
That guy's a jerk.
Yes, they do face
turned
off.
His back on his country.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Does he end up killing that guy?
Once he mortally wounds him, he gives him the chance at redemption. You know you're bleeding out. You know you're going to die. Tell me how to get into the room.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, he redeems himself in the final moments, and then Bartlett gives him a gun and says, you know, you can shoot yourself in the head.
That's
now,
like
he does,
six
that's
tropes
it.
Out of five.
Yeah. It's an overachieving movie.
It is. It
excellent.
Is. Awesome.
Cool. I like it.
That was fun.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for listening to The Escort Mission. I have been Chaz.
Justin.
You
Robin.
You have been
Mike.
We love you, listeners.
Yay. Good job, host.
Look at him. He hosted.
Oh, yeah. I am.
Good job, host.
Yay. Thank you.
And absolutely. Thanks, Justin and Robin, for being on the yes. show. Josh, if you listen to this.
Thanks for going to
which
Europe.
You probably
thanks
won't.
For going to Europe so yes. that they could take your stead. But you'll be back next week.
Yes.
So.
All right. Wait.
See, yeah,
it's over.
Has there been a more awkward goodbye?
42 episodes in, and we still have no idea how to end this.
Oh, I just hit the guitar!
Oh, you hit the guitar!